Another exclusive live session with the Hype Magazine.
You need to stop what you're doing. Pay attention.
World famous
Hype Magazine. Going down right now.
Welcome to another live session with the Hype Magazine. I'm your editor-in-chief, Jerry Dobie. And today, I've got a really exciting guest by the name of Tom Bilyeu. He is the co-founder and host of a new series, well, new to us, called Impact Theory. If you're a health nut, you probably know him from his energy bars, Quest Nutrition, which is a billion-dollar company, but he's gone on to, instead of retiring, he opened another chapter of his life, and his story includes Impact Theory, which is a show that is designed to create, cultivate, and monetize impactful, culturally relevant content in both the arenas of traditional entertainment as well as the modern social variant. I love it. We met him because of an amazing interview that he did with Talib Kweli, one of hip-hop's finest, and I had to get to know more about Tom Bilyeu at Impact Theory. Welcome and good morning.
Thank you, man. I'm excited to be here.
Man, I'm amazed that we got an opportunity to catch up with you in your busy schedule, although you said you've been up for hours. It's 8 o'clock in the morning on the West Coast. But they say that legends are made at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning, as we discussed before, man. So from the outside looking in, give us the rundown on it, Impact Theory.
Yeah, so I had at Quest, we had about 3,000 employees at our height, and about 1,000 of them grew up hard as hell. And I'm talking, there was one guy whose sister was shot to death in the heart with an AK-47 in his front yard. Mm. Another guy held his stepfather while he bled to death from a gunshot wound to the head. Another kid hid under a car while his best friend bled out from a point-blank shotgun blast to the stomach. And it was just like story after story after story like that. And I'd also big brothered in the inner cities for about 8.5 years. And so just had the sense of there's these extraordinary people that will never go on to do anything with their lives because they don't believe they can. And so I just started, it was just too many people that I thought were extraordinary that I felt like were headed down a path that wasn't going to be very advantageous for them. It was either going to end up jail, dead, or just, you know, below what they really could do. And so I started to ask myself, no bullshit, what would it take to impact their mindset at scale? So some people are completely satisfied with like one-on-one relationships. I'm just not. So for me, it's about, you know, how many people can I touch? And so as I started thinking about really what it would take, the answer seemed to me to be pretty clear that the way that humans assimilate truly disruptive information is through narrative. And I always tell people there's really two ways to be culturally relevant today. And one is music, and I suck at music. And the other is through narrative storytelling. And so that's my background. That has always been my first passion. It's what I have a skill set for. So that seemed like the no-brainer. So if I want to have the kind of impact that I want to have, I'm going to need to be in there telling stories. And so you said it very well. There's traditional storytelling, and there's now the modern social variant. And we started in the modern social variant of just what we call the nonfiction stuff, direct to camera, talking to people about how to think, how to live their lives in a way that's going to be more empowering, bringing on people like Talib Kweli. We also had Daryl DMC on the show. And have, you know, reached out to a lot of people in the hip hop community, just because I think there's so many powerful insights, and they often blend the sort of narrative storytelling ability with the music. And so to us, that's a perfect blend.
Okay. So one of the keystones in, as I'm receiving it, is filling the void with conversations that should be had, but aren't really being had, or at least not being presented on a large scale.
Yeah, if you can get the right people in and ask questions that, you know, get them on a roll as to how they've gotten where they've gotten. And that's really been the mainstay of our show is, all right, I think there are universal principles to success. So I don't care where you grew up. I don't care who your parents are. I don't care how much money you make. Like, there's just a certain way to think and a certain way to act that's going to allow you to achieve what you want to achieve. And by bringing in these people from crazy diverse backgrounds and getting them to talk about how they ended up succeeding the way that they did, that's just been revelatory. And all of us, you know, myself included, are able to take the bits and pieces from this very broad set of people to begin to, you know, empower ourselves, to put together a skill set that lets us actually execute on our dreams.
Okay. So you're executing on your dreams, you're having these conversations, and you're building a community. Talk to me about the community building portion of Impact Theory, the show being one part, community building being the next part.
Yeah, so I learned at Quest a very powerful lesson, which is if your focus really is on adding value to people's lives and then you help them organize into a community where they can interact with each other, then it's just really powerful. And so from the jump at Impact Theory, that was our, you know, theory. I mean, literally, the reason it's called Impact Theory is this is all, you know, when we stop and think about how you create a movement, how you do something that is really going to touch people's lives, those are the elements. So you have to give them an ideology around which to gather, and then you have to facilitate them getting to know each other. And social media is extraordinary. Look, it can be a total waste of time. I think that's pretty clear. But it can also be a place to meet people who think like you think. So we try to foster that. So whether that's, you know, with Facebook groups, whether that's just with calling attention to what's happening in the comments on Instagram, or, you know, continuing to cultivate what is a vastly positive commenting community around YouTube. You know, we're just trying, and we, even for a while, were really pushing people to meet up in real life, and there were people all over the world doing their own Impact Theory meetups. I mean, it's, you know, just trying to do things like that. And then when I speak, I try to make myself as available as humanly possible for people to answer questions, to shake hands, hugs, photos, like all of that stuff, just to get people together, get them meeting people in real life, communicating with people that think like they think, so that you can reinforce this positivity.
That's got to be an insane kind of situation. I, you know, the meetups are one thing. There are a lot of people doing meetups, but you're a public speaker as well. How much time do you spend after your talks meeting and greeting with people? Is it an additional, cost you another hour, or you're investing another 2 hours after the show to really discuss with people, or do you have to move on?
My record is 11 and a half hours. So I once stood in one place for 11 and a half hours without eating, without peeing, without anything, literally just answering questions. I'm not always able to do that, but I do try to make myself available as much as possible after that. One, just because, look, if you really want to build something that matters, if you want to get people excited about what you're doing, you've got to outwork everybody. You've just got to show people that you're willing to invest in them, that you're willing to add value. And like, that to me is just the key. If you want to build something, you've got to really shock people with the amount of value that you're prepared to deliver.
Good. Yeah, that was shocking. 11 hours. I'm a military dude. I've stood in place maximum 2.5 hours in scalding sun. I couldn't imagine doing it for 11 hours. Just being fully available, and making yourself, you know, open and receptive to other people's conversations for that long time. Shout out to you.
Well, thank you.
I probably could, but I certainly don't think at my age I have the patience to do it. So outside of this show, let's talk about, you know, some of the endeavors that you have. You got comics, you got a partnership with Steve Aoki and Neon Future, which is a lot well talked about within the dance music community. You got graphic novels, books, television, film. I mean, what do you not do at Impact Theory?
Yeah, I mean, the reality is, unfortunately, right now we don't do music. That's one area that it would be really fascinating as we go to see if you know, we could bring on the talent that could really do something amazing there. But right now, that is sort of the thing that I think is really impactful culturally that we don't have in-house expertise. But yeah, the other things that you mentioned, those, that's where we really focus. If there's a camera involved, if there's, you know, a way to hit people on an emotional level, we try to be there with something that is both just rad entertainment. Cause at the end of the day, like, the most dangerous thing for somebody in my position would be to be preachy. And, you know, you see that a lot. You'll see people in the hip hop community and they try to go sort of full, you know, empowerment, if you will. And it's like, it ends up being a miss because they can forget that first you have to entertain. Like, if you want to educate, you've got to entertain first. And so, you know, it comes down to, is the beat, is it sick? Lyrically, are you there? And if you're there, then okay, you can, you know, pull a Kendrick Lamar and take people somewhere deep and present them with something that maybe they haven't thought about before. But first, it's just got to be sick music. And the same thing is true for us. It's like, at the end of the day, if anything that we do even remotely sounds like preaching or we have an agenda, then people are going to tune out. So my thing has always been, look, 90% of the people that encounter, especially like take the comic book, 90% of the people that read the comic are just going to think it's a dope story. And my thing is, as long as there's that layer underneath, as long as we're making people feel some kind of way, because my thing is, at the end of reading one of our books or, you know, God willing, we get this made into a TV show or a film, like, at the end of that, we want you to feel like you're capable of more than you did at the beginning. So as long as we get there, as long as people have that, you know, feeling, then we've done our job.
Okay. Talk to me about your corporate citizenship and what are you doing? I mean, besides the telling of the stories, which is amazing, by the way, all that you do, talk to me about some of the things outside of impact theory that are maybe not directly related to impact theory, but are part of the ideology and the mission of impact theory within the community. As a corporate citizen, what are you taking part in?
Well, I think the most interesting thing that we're doing, and it is inside the company, and I know you're looking for something outside, but I think you'll see why I'm saying this. The most interesting thing that I think that we're doing is every full-time employee at Impact Theory has ownership and profit sharing in the company. And to me, this is very much a case of give the gift you would want to receive, which, by the way, can be dangerous and can be a very stupid way to go about things because not everybody is motivated in the same way. But for me, it's like, I need to know that the harder and more intelligently I work, the more I'm going to be compensated. And so I want people to understand, look, if you help build this into something, then you're going to get a piece of that. And that, I think, is something that I'd love to see more companies adopting, is really inviting full-time employees. Now, this is very different than what's going on in Silicon Valley, where it's like you could be there for 3 years and then exit and it's what's called vesting and you still get a piece of that. That's not how we play. What I'm trying to incentivize is long-term relationships. I want people, I want to buck this trend of like 18 months at a company and then you're gone. Like, I want people to really be invested. I want them to be here and I want them to be enriched as a part of being here. But it's all predicated on success. So that's something that we've had a lot of success with in terms of getting people that really get that, that want to be an owner, that want to succeed when the company succeeds. And it just brings a hunger out in people that I find very interesting. Beyond that, I have an investing strategy that is around things that I think are going to really help people. And the biggest thing that we're involved with is a company called Neurovalens, which is developing technology to help people with their health. So they have one already for weight loss, and then they have another one being developed for sleep, which does basically deep brain stimulation, which is pretty profound in terms of its ability to impact both weight loss and sleep. So my thing is, you can't just focus on the mind. You have to also focus on the body. Like, if you really want to optimize your life, you've got to be in both, which has always fucking weirded people out. They always want me to be one or the other. But the reality is, and the funny thing is, when I was at Quest, people were like, why is the protein bar guy talking about mindset? when I exited Quest and started Impact Theory, then people were like, why is the mindset guy talking about health? So the greatest frustration of my life is that people don't understand that those two have got to go together. So our strategy, both in and out of the company, is that, is to help facilitate things that allow people to get their mind right, get their body right.
I think it's a good 360 strategy. I mean, you know, there's a massive discussion about mental health and physical health and, you know, the abilities to succeed professionally and what are our roadblocks for success, and it all ties in together. A healthy mind and a healthy body together create success. Another thing I think that I want to shout you out about is, you know, you're not only giving people employment, but you're giving them an opportunity to mentally be invested in a project or a company that, and they're looking at that mailbox money later on down the line. A lot of that isn't done. I mean, you get your 401k and yay, hallelujah, but to see a company grow and to have things being performance-based and contribution-based, it's basically you get out what you get, what you put in kind of situation. That's a unique strategy in this day and age, as far as I can see, when looking at the corporate world. So shout out to you for that, because that changes mindsets right there.
Thank you, man.
That's big. What's the most important thing that we should know about Tom Billu and what you're doing?
I think the most important thing for people to understand is that I started dumb, scared, insecure, full of anxiety, and I was still able to go on to be very successful by finally one day saying, okay, this isn't good enough. I'm not happy here. I'm not okay with this. And a lot of my change was born around shame. And the thing that really frustrates me is people look at me now, they see that I have, you know, a verbal ability, that I can speak, that I can be in front of camera, that I've built a big company, all of that stuff. And they think it's a result of me being unusually intelligent or just having genetic gifts that other people don't have. And that really is not my story. Nobody would have made that claim when I was a kid. My own mother quietly assumed that I was going to fail. When I went to ask my now father-in-law for his blessing to marry his daughter, he said no. He didn't think that I was going to amount to anything. And the reality is people had accurately identified me. Like, people will be like, oh, well, didn't they just misread you? And I'm like, the answer is no. The reality is back then I really was a mess. And I really was laying in bed 3-4 hours a day every day because I was too lazy and too scared to get out of bed to, you know, apply myself and really see what I could do with my life. And so it was just finally feeling so ashamed about doing that I was like, all right, I have to make a change. I have to do something differently. I started learning about the mind. I started learning about what humans are capable of. I started focusing on our ability to change. And I think that's what I want people to understand. You have this insane ability to change. I'm not saying everybody's the same. Fucking LeBron James has something extraordinary. Like, he just has it. And I'm not denying any of that. I'm just saying wherever you are, you can be tenfold that, 100-fold that. And so for anybody dissatisfied with where they are, I'm just saying look at my own life as proof that you can come from sort of mediocre stock and then really do something pretty extraordinary with your life. And it's all about understanding what the human animal is capable of and then putting in the fucking work. And that's the takeaway from my story is I worked day after day after day after day for years and years and years. Nobody had heard of me until I'd been in business for like 14 years. So It's like you have to put all that work in, then worry later about whether, you know, people are looking at you and they're impressed. Like right now, because of Instagram culture, it's like everybody wants to be, you know, fly right from the jump. And it's like, it doesn't work like that. You've got to go build something. You've got to do something extraordinary. You have to shape yourself into somebody capable of a championship performance long before you try to get people excited about your championship ring. And I think that's where people get confused. Like, everybody wants the ring, but people don't want to put in the work.
Mm. I like the way you think. You got some hood up in you, Tom. I'm telling you.
The and funny thing is, out, like I'm saying, I really worked in, I went to USC. So USC is like in South Central. And so being in there and spending a lot of time in that environment and working at Quest, it's like you really realize there's so much wisdom to that. There's so much wisdom to the streets. And it's like, man, I will take a good idea from wherever it comes.
I love it. So USC, South Central, right there off of Figueroa and 60th or something like that in that area. You rich musical culture. What was your music experience growing up? What did you love?
Well, growing up, I was uber into hip hop when I was a kid. For anybody out there, I'm gonna make a deep cut reference. We're gonna find out who the real hip hop heads are here. I was all about the Boogie Boys. Deep into that. I used to have Fly Girl memorized so tightly that, I don't know if this was like for you when you were a kid, but when I was a kid, people would try to repeat what you were saying just to fuck with you. And if anybody ever tried to do that to me, I would just do Fly Girl at like hyper speed, and they couldn't keep up. I always loved that. I used to break dance endlessly as a kid. I used to do talent show competitions and break dance. I was big into DMC, big into Beastie Boys. And then by the time I went to college, and man, I don't know if anybody remembers like JJ Fad, MC Light, like those were all my jams. Slick Rick, like that's what I grew up on. And then it morphed into Two Live Crew, NWA. And for like a white kid growing up where I grew up, which was sort of almost not rural, that would definitely be misleading, but like where I grew up, you had to have an acre of land to build a house. So you can imagine it's not apartment complexes, it's not urban. And so getting access to that culture, which was ultra urban, it was just unlike anything that I'd ever encountered that early, was really pretty awesome. And then as somebody who has a natural affinity for language, like hip hop, the way that they use language in hip hop is so fucking awesome. And that was the thing that drew me to it originally, was nobody was playing with language more. Nobody was having more fun. It was just really interesting. And then as a kid who grew up with a lot of anxiety, hip hop is like one of the few genres where anxiety is almost completely absent. And so it was this really interesting entree to a world where people were, they were tough, they were aggressive, they were linguistically advanced, like the things that they could do with rhyme. It was just, it really, really drew me in. And so then as like I got into college, I was just so fucking focused on getting good grades and learning that I was not deeply into music, and then really only re-found music in like the early 2000s, got way back into that, and then just got consumed emotionally by Jay-Z. That guy, like in terms of what he can do lyrically, nobody hits me as hard as Jay-Z.
I don't think anybody can hit as hard as Jay-Z, period. You know, shout out Tupac, shout out Biggie, but lyrically Jay-Z is the cleverest cat to ever spit a lyrical missile. That's my opinion. You know what I mean?
I am with you.
I've got to respect your time, but I need to ask. I'm looking at the impact theory belief system, the 25 bullet points, and what killed me was number 5. You can do anything you set your mind to without limitation. And then you hit number 6. Number 5 is a lie, but it's an empowering lie. Impactivists do and believe that which empowers. Talk to me about that mindset right there.
Yeah, so my thing is I would tell people all the time, look, you can do anything you set your mind to without limitation. And then people would hit me back with like, I can't fly without, you know, an airplane. And I'd be like, Jesus, like you are wasting your time focusing on the wrong thing. Yes, it's not exactly true. I fully get that. I'm even willing to say, yep, it's a lie. But the reality is if you focus on what you can't do, if you focus on your limitations, then they become your reality. If you argue for your limitations, they become yours. And all I'm saying is your ability to change is so extraordinary. To focus on where you're limited, to focus on the things that you can do is just dumb. And so I wanted people to just embrace it. Yes, it's a lie. So what? Like, you need to believe the things about yourself. I'm not saying, you know, never acknowledge what is true in the world. That's definitely a waste of time. But you want to, when you're thinking about yourself, you want to empower yourself, period. And if that means you have to lie to yourself, I'm all for it. Anything that's going to get you to take more profound action towards improving your life, I'm all for that. And if that's telling yourself the lie that you can do anything you set your mind to, I'm in.
I love it. I love it. Man, my last official question is, what has been your craziest where they do that or WTF moment thus far in your life?
Man, this one scares me, and it's become the very reason that I created Impact Theory. So when we were just growing so fast, man. So our first 3 years alone, Quest grew by 57,000%. That's in manufacturing. It's almost, even having been there, it's almost impossible to conceive of. That's going from making things in a commercial kitchen that you rent by the hour that holds like six people to having 300,000 square feet in 5 years. So just like trying to bring people on fast enough is crazy. So we put out, because my whole thing is, it doesn't matter who you are today. It only matters who you want to become and the price you're willing to pay to get there. So in manufacturing, you're going to be in the hood straight up. It's just that simple. So our first facility was like right next door to Compton. And one of our early employees was a kid from the street who almost went to prison for attempted murder because he wasn't willing. He knew who did it and he wasn't willing to say. And so he almost went to prison. This fucking great kid, super interesting. And I was like, man, if there are more people like you, I want them. And so I said, look, tell all your friends, even if they have a felony conviction, we'll consider them for employment if they're awesome. And so we put out on the street that even felons could apply. So we had people lined up around the building. It was insane. But I had to start interviewing them like two and three at a time. And I had to find a way to like really quickly cut to the chase of who they were as a human being. And so I decided to start asking this question. A magic genie is about to show up. They're going to grant you one wish and one wish only. You can't ask for more wishes or to cure cancer or bring somebody back from the dead. It's got to be something for you. What do you wish for? Dude, every single person, I must have asked this question probably 200 or 300 times. Every single person gave the same answer. Now, admittedly, I narrowed their world down by saying, you know, they're there for a job interview. I tell them all the things they can't wish for. So fair enough. But the fact that every single one of them said $1 million, I was like, what the fuck? It's a magic genie. You can't even buy a house in Los Angeles for $1 million. And you ask for $1 million? Like, you could have asked for $1 trillion. You could have asked for a money machine that prints money that will always be accepted no matter where you take it. And I was literally like, so what the fuck about it? I was like, I don't understand. At one point, I actually went to my team and I said, are you guys setting them up? Are you fucking with me? Like, how are they all saying $1 million? It's just a ridiculously small sum of money. And then I realized for them, that was an unimaginable amount of money. So like for me, $1 trillion, like I'm probably playing myself short too. But that for them was an unimaginable amount of money. And so it just got me thinking, all right, I'm meeting some of the most extraordinary people. I don't know if you've ever sat down and talked with like a real successful drug dealer. They're fucking entrepreneurs in the extreme. Like, they're so talented, dude. They know what undercover cops drive, what cars. They know where the cameras are in the neighborhood, what direction they point. They have to deal with employees, though they don't call them that. They have to deal. Like, I was telling one guy who was telling me the story about how people were trying to break into his house to steal his money in his stash. And I was like, man, as hard as business has been for me, no one has ever shown up in my house with a shotgun and tried to kill me. So I was like, that's just on a whole fucking other level. So talking to them and realizing like, oh my God, these guys are better entrepreneurs than I am. They're smarter than me. Some of them are just more extraordinary humans, but I've achieved so much more in my life. Why the fuck is that? And it's because of my perspective. I had a different perspective. I believed I could do anything I set my mind to, right? My parents told me, you can be anything you want to be. I wasn't being told scary shit like the system doesn't want you to win. People don't want to see people that look like you succeed. Nobody ever said that to me. So I was like, whoa, I have a totally different mindset. And because of that, I've taken risks and acted in a way that led me down a path to becoming an entrepreneur, even though I had no entrepreneurial instincts whatsoever. I had to teach myself all of that. It was brutally painful, but I believed that I could do it. So here I was sitting across from these extraordinary people who just didn't believe they could do it. Like, their mindset was so small that they thought $1 million is what I should ask a magic genie for. So my whole life has been a reaction to that what the fuck moment, which is, how do I get people to realize they can do anything they set their mind to at scale?
Wow. I'm blown away. I mean, even though at one point in my life that was my reality, $1 million was so unimaginable, you know, like literally eating beans and rice every night and, you know, or eggs and rice. Rice was the staple, you know what I mean? So I understand wearing the same clothes, you know, and getting capped at, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. $1 million at one point was a benchmark for me. It was the ultimate benchmark. It's like, you made it at that. So, yeah. Man, is there anything you wanted to cover that I may have neglected?
No, man. Like, if people hear me talk and they take away that they're capable of more than they ever thought, then I've done my job.
It's been an amazing conversation. Go check out Impact Theory. Look, if you don't read anything else, go to impacttheory.com. Go to the Learn tab. Check out the Impact Theory Belief System and 25 bullet points. If you're not enlightened and entertained by, I'm going to leave number 20. You have to go and read it to get to number 25. It's such an amazing, amazing piece right there. That last answer, the last part of the belief system is such an amazing. You have to see it to believe it. And where else can they find Tom Bilyeu? I know Impact Theory goes under Tom Bilyeu on Instagram, and then on where else?
YouTube, Instagram, and YouTube. Those are the big ones. I'm everywhere. I'm Facebook, I'm Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. But the two that I really focus on are YouTube and Instagram.
Man, I want to thank you so much for all that you do, and thank you for spending the time with us this morning.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you having me on.
All right, bro. All right, everybody. The Hype Magazine Live Sessions. We've had Tom Bilyeu, Impact Theory. Go check it out. ImpactTheory.com.